electrifying sport on the planet. Mixed Martial Arts. You've been looking for the definitive podcast to call your new home to hear everything about it. The search is over. This is the MMA Anomaly Show. No filter. Bringing you the hottest MMA breakdown straight from the heart of the octagon. This show is all about MMA breakdowns. For fans, by fans. We're talking UFC, MMA, and the occasional big boxing match. We'll bring our unique take on how these fights are going to play out and who we think are the best bets. Welcome to the MMA Anomaly Show. No filter. And now your hosts, Olin, a.k.a. MMA Anomaly, and Emiliano, a.k.a. Jive Turkey Nano.
What is up, fight fans? Welcome back to another episode of the MMA Anomaly Show, No Filter. I'm your host, Olin, a.k.a. MMA Anomaly. And with me, as you saw last time, is a special co-host here, Mad Max Meridian, the co-host with the most now. How are we doing?
What up, brother? A little two times in 1 week. I'm spoiled. It's like you gave me the keys to the guest house or something, dude. I'm just making my way in.
Love to see it. You love to see it. And we have a bit of a banger of a free fight card to go over this week, in my opinion. It is UFC Vegas 89. My gosh, we're just running through these UFC Apex cards. So we are going to go ahead and start at the bottom. We don't have a ton of heat on all of these fights, but we definitely have some heat on some of them. So we will go ahead and start at the bottom, work our way up. I know you had something to say about this one. We're going to go ahead and start with Muhammad Usman coming in against Mick Parkin. What are your thoughts on this fight overall? Do you think that talent runs in the family bloodline there for the Usmans?
Man, I think talent in any like sports endeavor does. Now, do I think that Muhammad is the fighter that Kamaru is? I don't think it's even close. This fight just has me interested, maybe more so for like the peripheral fighters around these guys than they themselves. Like, obviously, you've got Kamaru Usman, bigger brother to Muhammad there, former welterweight champ, potential welterweight GOAT. But Mick Parkin, man, I've got my eye on this guy. Like, he trains with Aspinall, from what I understand. Like, pretty, like, technically sound. He's absolutely enormous, like, built like a fridge, just huge. He's strong. Pretty decent grappling as well. A little flat-footed. He kind of, like, plods a little bit, but so does Muhammad in turn. So I don't know. This matchup, it's fun to me. It surprises me that it's as low as it is on the card. I almost feel like this one should be, like, I don't know, main event of the prelims or some kind of placement like that. But it's just a fun, interesting matchup. If forced to pick, I think I lean a little bit towards Parkin just as far as, like, technical proficiency. I think he's a little bit cleaner of a striker. I think he's a little bit cleaner of a grappler. Now, he's probably not the athlete that Usman is, but I just think he puts it together a little bit better. What's your take on it?
Yeah, I mean, I'll be honest with you. I think Usman definitely stands a little bit better of a chance in this fight now that USADA has left the chat. Bad jokes aside there. I genuinely feel like the guy, just looking at him, like he might be on the juice here. And with that being said, Mick Parkin, even though he's 8-0, I mean, he didn't really impress me in his last fight. He looked really, really labored in there against Kyle Machado. And even before that against Jamal Pogues, like he looked pretty decent against Jamal Pogues. But with all due respect to Jamal Pogues, like most people look pretty decent in the UFC against Jamal Pogues. And that's, again, that's no disrespect. It's just like we're at the upper echelon here, and he kind of feels like one of those guys that just like slipped through the cracks, right? Like maybe lied on the resume, but still got the job. Mick Parkin, though, also feels that way to an extent. He strung together a handful of knockouts and then a rear naked choke win, all back to back to back to back, four in a row here. And before that, he got a ref stoppage win. So, I mean, literally every one of his fights before the UFC was a finish. Even the contender series, he got that rear naked choke. But since making it to the UFC, he looks big, he looks slow, he looks labored. And I think Usman is going to go out there and wrestle him. And with the ability to wrestle him, he's going to tire him out. He already looked labored in those last two fights, in my opinion. I got Usman in this one all day. The athleticism, the size, and the lack of USADA. again, I'll hammer that joke into the ground. Either talent or that runs in the family bloodline.
Yeah, or maybe a little sprinkle of both. Why not?
Maybe a little sprinkle of both, you know? You know, a little sprinkle in an Olympic pool.
Yeah. I wonder, my one other factor there was the mileage on Usman with the years of football and everything, and Mick being, I think he's like 6 or 7 years younger. That may be a factor, but I do think physicality and everything, I think you're spot on with Usman. That dude's just a kind of a beast anyway. He's a big...
He's big, dude. He's tanky as hell.
No neck at all.
Ugh.
Boy, Jack.
He's a big old boy. that's a fact check. So... He's definitely a big old boy. I think that big old boy gets it done in Muhammad Usman. I don't know that he gets a finish. I feel like this is probably going to be a very heavyweight fight. It's going to be grindy. It's going to be long.
Couple tired.
I could be
boys.
Wrong. I could be wrong, but I think it's going to be a couple of tired guys in there. Igor Da Silva versus Andre Lima. Another case where someone's O must go. I don't know if you have a dog in this race at all. Do you? Do you have a dog in this race?
No, brother. I don't know squat about these guys other than I'm impressed by their records. But then you look at like who they're fighting, and it's a lot of like Jungle Fight and R1 and stuff like that. So I'm impressed by the records. But no, I don't. I've got no skin in this game.
Yeah, same. I got nothing on this one. I don't think I'll be betting on it, to be honest with you. Both guys, like you said, very impressive records. One of them, interesting enough, does actually have a loss to his name, but it's in Muay Thai. So to me, that actually is super impressive because that tells me that he's got a separate skill set that he's going to bring into the octagon.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, with that being said, gun to my head on this one, I'll probably take the Muay Thai guy being the Muay Thai guy myself. So give me Andre Lima. And it also looks like via the Tapology.com stats, where you can live vote as a fan on there. Out of 1,901 votes, it's leaning 69% towards Andre Lima as well via fan votes. So I'm not the only one that's apparently a fan of Muay Thai here, guys. Or Andre Lima, for that matter. It's a pretty damn big swing. 31-69. So I'll lean Lima here just because I don't really have a dog in the race. And just looking at their records somewhat blindly, I am fairly impressed.
Just for grins, give me Igor then. He's only 20 years old, got 8 fights. Let's do it.
Let's go. I love it. I love the heat. Oh, man. This next one is another interesting one. So we have Montserrat Rendon coming in against Daria Zelazenkova. Jeez Louise. Zelazenkova, I think. Zelazenkova. Gosh, I got to hear John Anik say it because I'm like stumped on this one a little bit. And I haven't really seen her fight, to be honest with you. So I don't know how to pronounce her name. But it's Zhelezenkova. You give it a shot.
That's why I'm sitting here looking at it like Zhelezenkova or no, because there's no VIA. So Zhelezenkova. God, dude,
Zelazenkova. That sounds like it'd be a pretty St. Petersburg, Russia sounding name.
Yeah, I need to hit up Serge and ask him.
Yeah, man, he'll probably be better than us at this one.
Zelazenkova, damn,
that's tough. So again, another one of these fights where you know neither woman really has a lot of tape to watch, as far as UFC tape for that matter. But Montserrat Rendon. The monster. She actually does have one UFC fight. It was against Tamires Vidal. It was not super long ago. It was in, September of last year. And she did get it done via split decision, albeit. And before that, she came from Invicta. Invicta is a pretty well-touted promotion, in my opinion. I do feel like they produce future UFC champs and have in the past. Meanwhile, her opponent is from Ares FC. I don't know nearly as much about Ares FC. Have seen a couple of women hail from there that made it to the UFC, but I can't honestly tell you that they have the standings, in my opinion. as Invicta. So give me the woman fighting out of ECR Fight Center. Give me Montserrat Monster Rendon in this one.
Experience wins the day, huh? UFC experience, at least.
Yeah, I truly feel like it does. I mean, the big lights, we've seen them get to people in the past, man. And, you know, both of these women are really young in their careers. 6 fights for one, 9 fights for the other. And, you know, Daria can lose. You know, we see it on her record. Then again, so can anybody. I'm not saying that her opponent is unbeatable. But she's made it to the UFC and still has that one fight to her name, has faced the bright lights, and has gotten away with a split decision. Like to see her go out there and do a little bit more of the same in this one. Maybe a little bit more impressively, albeit, just so that way she doesn't necessarily leave it up to the judges. I know in her last fight, she outlanded her opponent by about 30 strikes. It was 112-78 and 9 more significant strikes than her opponent. The big tale from the fight for me, though, in her last one was the takedowns. She threatened the takedowns at all points of the fight from the first to the last round, and she landed 3 of 5. So pretty high clip of accuracy there. If she's able to go out there and do the same thing to her opponent, Zeleznyakov, I mean, I think she's probably going to be able to get it done. Her opponent has 3 decision wins to her name. But it also looks like a majority of her wins have come by way of knockout, as has her loss. So I don't know. Give me the consistency machine, you know?
Yeah, yeah, there's something to be said for somebody who can perform at a semi-high level on a regular basis. I mean, there's definitely something to be said for it. Probably when I was looking at this one, I don't know enough about him to put any skin in the game on this one. But the one thing that stood out to me was Montserrat being 35 and Zeleznyakova being 28 with 3 first-round knockouts, 2 second-round knockouts. It's like she's either explosive as hell or they're feeding her cans or something. So I don't know, man. I almost want to take her like a inside the distance and then hedge it with a Montserrat decision. I think maybe that'll be kind of the play. You can get Montserrat by points at +240. So, you know, put like a half a unit on there or something and then take a Zeleznyakova inside the distance or something. And I think that would probably be the best way to go, at least for my wallet.
I will throw out one more lifeline for you just a little bit here. So one of her most recent wins is over a woman named Maria Lusso, who's 6-4 and hasn't fought anything higher than Cage Warriors. Or actually, no, her Cage Warriors fight got canceled. No, actually, no, she did win a decision, unanimous decision in Cage Warriors. So that's, you know, fairly solid. And then other than that, she's also fought Liana Jojua, who is a UFC fighter now. Mm-hmm. And she beat Liana Jojua. She actually beat her via unanimous decision, which is super impressive. However, Liana Jojua only has 1 win in the UFC of her 5 fights. And that win is over Deanna Belbita, who is a little bit of an inconsistent fighter herself. Albeit a very, very fun follow on Instagram, and Twitter. Very entertaining.
Agreed. Jojua was literally the only name I recognized on her record. That's the same. Only one I saw. I was just like, I don't know any of these people.
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough. It's tough. Yeah, man. So I don't have really a lot of dog in this race at all, but gun to my head, give me the consistency machine in this one. Montserrat Rendon.
Hell yeah.
Now, in the next one, again, got a lot of up-and-comers on this card. They padded the bottom and then made it top-heavy, which I'm fine with. I think that's typically the way it should be in most cases. So we got Jarno Ahrens. Might be Ahrens, since there's 2 R's. Probably have to roll that. And then he's coming in against Steven Nguyen. Very happy that I've worked with someone who has that same last name, or I probably would have said Nguyen. Or some goofy shit. But it is Steven Nguyen. Funny enough, the guy I worked with had that exact same name. So great times. Yeah, small world. Not the same guy. Definitely the same name. In this one, we have 9-1 coming in against 13-5, 29 years of age against 30. both standing at 5'9", and same exact reach. So this is quite a bit of a toss up, in my opinion, here, guys. Curious, do you think that there's like a dominant side in this fight, or are you kind of split down the middle on this one?
I'm relatively split on it. When you actually look at the how their wins are comprised there, like knockout, submissions, decisions there, it's spread evenly across the board for both of them. It's kind of dudes at similar points in their career, 29 and 30. Like you said, it's just, it's almost a wash here. It's not like either of them are such standouts in one department that you're like, well, he's got this absolute edge over the other guy. I would say Aaron's has a little bit more maybe of the physicality department. He's relatively explosive guy. He's gets a little wild with it sometimes though. So I kind of worry about that. It's like, all right, he risks stuff, but he's so physical. He can kind of just explode out of it half the time. You know, he's in like a threatening position anyway. So I guess maybe for a pick, I'd lean a little bit that way based on physicality and stuff, but it's a wash, man. These bottom ones, I'm playing it pretty safe and staying out of the water with these guys.
Yeah, I definitely can't say that I blame you there, brother. It pays to play it safe sometimes on these ones. And again, like just looking at the odds on this one, they're not really juicy enough to pick a side. It's +154 or -185. So if you're not really confident that Steven Nguyen is going to win, then you probably don't really want to bet on him at minus odds or at favorite odds there. I mean, however, again, when I don't know these fighters, a lot of times and more often have bet on this one, or rather picked on this one. And it's 90% to 10% in favor of Steven Nguyen. And yeah, it's super, super, super lopsided here. Now it is, yeah, so 64.9% of people believe that Nguyen gets it done by decision. 1.8% of people think he gets it done by submission, and 33.4% of votes say that he's going to get it done by KO or knockout. So, wild.
Yeah, spread across the board there, but the 90-some-odd percent there in favor of Gwynn makes me feel like I'm being a little foolish here. I did notice the over 2.5 was at -175, so, I mean, that kind of had my attention, given the amount of decisions on him, but shit, maybe I'm on the wrong side with Aaron's there. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I'm leaning Steven Nguyen here. Just, I mean, being honest, looking at the guys, looking at the way they're built, and also looking at their records a little bit. Obviously, you know, Steven Nguyen has less fights, but he also has a lot less losses. He has 4 less losses, 5 times less losses. So pretty significant. And also the other thing that really stood out to me about him is he's pretty consistent from what I've seen anyways. Like, he is able to get it done, whether it goes the distance, able to get it done by knockout. He's able to get it done via guillotine. You know, don't be silly, jump the ghillie. And I mean, he also has that win over AJ Cunningham, who is a savage. I actually was scared that Cunningham was going to get the win in that fight, but he did not. I digress. And since then, AJ Cunningham has had 2 more fights, putting together a win in the first one and then getting an actual chance at the UFC on short notice against Ludovic Klein, which, of course, he lost in the first round. But I digress. We're talking about Steven Nguyen, who hasn't lost in some time. It's been almost 3 years, actually over 3 years since he's lost. So I don't think he's going to get handed a loss on Saturday night against Jarno Arins. Yeah, I mean, he's coming off of 2 back-to-back losses and a canceled bout with David Onama. I just don't think that he's going to be able to turn it around. I think he drew a really short straw here, and he's going to have a tough night ahead of him against Steven the Ninja Nguyen. Now, moving into the next one, now we're getting to the juice, guys. Now we're getting to the fucking the meat here, okay? We got Miles Johns coming in against tough alum Cody Gibson. Oh man, I am so excited about this fight. 29 years of age on Miles Johns' side, 36 years of age for Cody Gibson. Does not have a lot of time left for Cody Gibson here in this career. He is the taller man, standing at 5'8", though, while his opponent stands 5'6", and he also has the 5-inch reach advantage here, with a 71-inch reach over a 66-inch reach in Miles Johns. Oh, man, I got to be honest with you folks. I'm leaning Cody Gibson here. You know I like the fucking old dogs. And, you know, I like the dogs in general here. Cody Gibson at plus 120 odds. I mean, come on, serve it up. Give it up, dogs. And also, here's the reason. Okay, Cody Gibson is light on his feet. He drifts in and out. That last fight that he had in the UFC against a very, very game opponent, I actually thought he had done enough to possibly get the win in that fight. You know I'm talking about Brad Katona. Katona. Brad did really well in that fight, but I thought Cody looked really fucking well too. He looked like he'd improved significantly. Just kind of, you know, got away from him in that last round or maybe those last couple rounds. Call me crazy. I think he gets a finish in this one, man. I think he's going to go out there and finish a very wily Miles Chapo Johns. I think Miles Johns is definitely a beast, right? He got that big win over Vince Morales recently, then got a scheduled bout over Jaime Barcelos. Oh, man. I mean, the same way that Mario Bautista was able to go out there and get the win over him in fairly dominant fashion, I think we're going to see the same thing. The same way John Castaneda was able to go out there and get an arm triangle choke on him, I think we'll see the same thing. The only difference is I think we might see it a little bit sooner in the fight when they're both dry, when it might be like the first or second round. So I like Cody Gibson in this one, the Renegade. Give me that guy all fucking day. He's all heart, all grit, and he's honestly the last of a dying breed, you know, like one of the last of a dying breed. These gritty fighters that are willing to go out there and just die on their shields. And we love to see it as fight fans. Sign me up. You got a dog in this race, Mad Max?
Man, this is another one I was torn on. I actually leaned a little bit towards Johns, but it was one that I was very unsure on, largely the age difference there. I think Johns has a little bit of a wrestling advantage, whereas Cody might have the submission advantage, so it kind of maybe negates a little bit in that department. I thought Cody maybe had a slight speed advantage on the feet. Johns also doesn't, I noticed he doesn't throw a ton of volume. It's kind of a loaded up, throw a big shot kind of guy. The bladed stance, I didn't necessarily bladed, it's like a wide stance of Cody Gibson. He leaves that lead leg way out there a fair bit. And with Johns having the wrestling background, I kind of wonder if he's going to snatch that up a couple times and sit him on his ass. Though I noticed Cody favors, he likes to tie up quite a bit with the left and throw these right uppercuts. And Johns has this like low stance. And I kind of wonder if he's going to, that might play into that a little bit. He might get caught square on the money with the low stance or dropping for a takedown or, you know, catch a knee, something like that. Cody also throws the front kicks right up the middle quite a bit. And with that low stance, I wonder if he's going to get caught at some point. I just, the wrestling advantage, I got to favor the guy with that. You know, there's something to be said for if you can dictate where the fight takes place, and he's also 7 years younger. The one thing that really, really gives me some concern, Johns was breathing super heavy coming out of the first round of his last fight. Cody Gibson doesn't really seem to slow down all that much. Like, he just kind of sets a pace and goes.
Last round when he started fading against Katona, he still looked like he wasn't really breathing super heavy. Like, he just looked like he was a step behind Katona in that last round. But that's not a knock on him or his gas tank. I agree with you 100% on this.
I'm almost talking myself into switching to Cody Gibson here the more I'm saying it. But it's the wrestling that I keep going back to, especially with that wide-ass stance of Cody Gibson. And it's like, if anything's going to wear you down, it's going to be the wrestling. And Cody's shown a little bit of weakness in that department. So I would say maybe John's by decision. I don't necessarily see him getting a finish. I actually think Cody Gibson's probably the more likely one to get the finish. So, you know, if I was a betting man, and sometimes I am, I'd probably go Gibson inside the distance, John's decision, or something along those lines. Maybe a John's money line, 1.5 units, and Gibson by points at plus 250. Or I'd have to figure it out. Do you see an inside the distance line anywhere yet for Cody?
I have not seen an inside the distance line for Cody. All right. But that would be a pretty juicy line, if I'm being honest with you. I think that would probably be a safer bet. Yeah, I just think that Cody gets it done in this one, man. There is the alternative or the winning method double chance. So by TKO, by DQ, by KO or by submission. I think they had that one on him. Let me see. Yeah, on DraftKings Sportsbooks, they have those odds. So Cody Gibson to win by KO, TKO, DQ, or submission is plus 425 currently.
Ooh, I definitely would play that. Put
I am definitely going to play that. I am definitely going to put a unit on that. That's happening.
I'm going to slap that one down too. We're hedging her. Yeah. Cody, I mean, that's essentially inside the distance there. That's every inside the distance method, ain't it?
Yeah, that's money in the bank.
0.25 unit.
Yeah, that's going to happen. We gotta make sure that we bet that one, folks. Because there's no reason not to. I think, as I said, if it happens, this is how it happens. Cody's going to go out there. He's going to look to finish. He has something to prove. He's also fighting for a job, in my opinion, here. Typically, when they sign those folks right off the top, they don't give them a ton of fights on those contracts. So let's see. Let's see what he ends up making happen here. I think that he's game to get it done. I do think that Miles Johns showed a lot of weaknesses in his last bout. So that being said, give me this guy for the finish, for the win. And we'll go ahead and jump right on into the next one, folks. We got Ricardo Ramos coming in against Juicy J, Julian Arosa. This is a very, very fun matchup, in my opinion. Both of these guys are at similar trajectories in their career, albeit Juicy J having just a wealth more experience here. 28-11 versus 16-5 in this one is wild, right? Also, Julian Arosa is 34. Ricardo Ramos is 28. So, I mean, he is a bit younger in his career. But again, I feel like they're on this same trajectory in the featherweight division currently in the UFC. So this is great matchmaking, in my opinion. A little bit of a height advantage for the older man in Juicy J. He's got the 6'1 height coming in against 5'8 for Ricardo Ramos. And 72-inch reach for Ramos, while Juicy J sporting that extra 2.5 inches with 74.5 in this one. I do think that that reach is going to pay dividends for him, as Juicy J is light on his feet. And honestly, I mean, though he's had somewhat of an up and down career in the UFC, and he's coming off of a knockout loss, obviously, from Fernando Padilla, anybody can get caught. And I think that's simply what happened. He looked good in that fight up until he did get caught. And you know, again, before that one, he kind of drew the short end of the stick, right? He ended up going in there against Alex Caceres. Bruce Leroy is an underrated king, in my opinion. He is definitely a wily veteran that can take you out at any given moment. And that's what happened. But all of that just to say, give me Caroquinha, Ricardo Ramos. I think this guy is good, even though he just recently lost to Charles Air Jourdain. I mean, who the fuck thought Jourdain was going to go in there and throw a guillotine? Again, don't be silly. Jump the guillotine, guys. Charles Air Jourdain did it, and it worked. So I think he just caught him by surprise. I think he was expecting a striking match, and he ended up just getting got. I think we might end up seeing another one of those signature spinning back elbows from him, though. Juicy J does come in with his hands down oftentimes, and he has been known to eat the counter shot. So I don't think this is going to be much different for him. I do think he steps into a counter shot. I could see it being that spinning back elbow. Do you have a dog in this race?
Same dog you got. I was going with Ramos as well. This is one that I feel like you basically covered. I'm sitting here looking through my bullet points on my research, and that was, I mean, literally almost every single thing I was going to say. The one thing, Arosa's been knocked out 7 times. That's not great, especially 2 in a row. It's like, all right, this ain't looking great. And while 34 isn't exactly ancient in fight years, yeah, you're kind of getting there a little bit, especially if you start suffering multiple knockouts back-to-back against a dynamic, kind of unpredictable striker like Ramos that generally doesn't line up very well. Arosa was getting tagged, man. I don't know. He seems pretty hittable, in my opinion. So, yeah, I think Ramos lands the big shots. I worry a little bit when Ramos goes on the ground. It seems like he has a little bit trouble maintaining, like, positional dominance. He will sometimes give that up to go for, like, some slick. He was doing some like inversion type goofy shit, leg entanglement last time. That's just like, bro, what are you, what are you doing? This isn't sport jujitsu. And even in sport jujitsu, that would have been moving from a dominant half guard top position to going for like a goofy leg entanglement. Like, I don't, not a lot of people would recommend you do that. If you want to win, at least. Now, if that's like your specialty, it's one thing, but he did that straight into a guillotine choke. So it's like, all right, well, I don't know what the fuck you're doing, because that wasn't great. Now, Jordan is a black belt. Exactly. So I just think Ramos is too unpredictable. Those spinny kicks and elbows and shit that he throws, man, those are hard to see coming. He clearly does them enough that he's comfortable with them and doesn't really telegraph them. I think he falls into a bit of a reactionary trap at times, where he's kind of reacting to the other fighter as opposed to pressing the pace. But I don't think with Arosa that's going to be much of a problem. So give me Ramos. I'll probably take a money line at -150 just so I got everything covered. Take him straight up.
I love that. I definitely love that. Yeah, I mean, I think Ramos gets it done again. His only losses in the UFC are to people like Lucky Leroy Murphy, Zubaira Tukugov, and Charles Air Jordan. Like, all of those are noteworthy names, in my opinion. And none of those are people that, like, you should really get a huge knock on your name value for losing. That being said, he hasn't really strung together wins over big names. So, you know, it would be nice to see him get another big win. I will tell you, he has gotten a spinning back elbow knockout over Ayman Zahabi, which is definitely noteworthy in my opinion. So he's hit that same exact spinning back elbow knockout twice. That exactly, just kind of echoing what you've already said here, definitely shows that he has trained and worked that elbow a number of times on a number of occasions. So yeah, man, we absolutely love to see that. And I personally, yeah, I think he gets it done. I'm looking forward to the fight, and I'm here for it, man. I think this guy's future is bright. I think he's on a great trajectory. They're kind of like passing ships. One's going the opposite way. One's going up. One's going down. And you know, two crossing ships in the sea. I think that, again, this is great matchmaking and should be a great match. Like, Juicy J is definitely not somebody to completely count out. He's always got a shot in there. I just think that he might end up catching a spinning back elbow. As you said, he's very hittable, more so with counters than anything. I've seen the guy get countered in most of his fights more often than not. So we'll see how it turns out for him. But my money's on the other guy here, Ricardo Ramos. Now, this next one is probably top three for me on this fight card. It might be number one. We got Trey Ogden, who is actually the coach of a young man that we actually interviewed on this channel, Garrett Armfield. And he is fighting Kurt the Hurt Hollebaugh, who I literally ran into as I was leaving the UFC X event last year. And his wife took a picture of me and him together, which was amazing. So I've said it here on the show before. I'll say it here on the show again. Once you meet a fighter, it's just extremely hard, if not impossible, to bet against or to bet. Yeah, to not bet against them. Right. So I can't bet against the guy. I got to bet for Kurt the Hurt Hollebaugh. And, you know, Hollebaugh, young, woo, woo. He's going to get it done. I just think he's going to get it done inside the distance. As much as I really like Trey Ogden, and get this, like, my favorite number, my lucky number, 616. If you reverse his win loss rate, he's at 616. So you would think I'd be going for Trey Ogden here. And, you know, I do want to see the guy win, just not this Saturday. Again, we have ourselves a situation where Kurt the Hurt Hollebaugh, he doesn't have a ton of time left. Granted, Trey Ogden doesn't either. He's 34 as well, but Kurt's 37. And I still feel like he's got a lot left to give, even with the limited years he's got left. So a big win here over Trey Ogden would do a lot for him in the lightweight division. Would it make him into the top 15? Probably not. But it put him maybe one win outside of the top 15, or one impressive win outside of the top 15. So in this one, I do think that Trey Ogden is a game opponent. He's a wily opponent, but Kurt has been here before. He has had his back against the wall before. This is no different, folks. I think Kurt gets it done. And so do 66% of the people on Tapology, believe it or not, which you fucking love to see, right? So I am not only going to take this guy, but I am going to take him inside the distance. I'm going to take him on that double path of victory here on DraftKings Sportsbooks. So, Kurt the Hurt Hollebach by KO, TKO, DQ, or submission. We're getting that at plus 240. And when you parlay it as part of the Tough Dogs parlay here, you get it at plus Tough Dog odds of 1,685. So that is, just for quick math's sake, one unit to cash in 17, and you bet your bottom dollar, I'm going to put a unit on it.
Okay, go for it. What was the odds on that one, those two together? It's both inside, or, you know, they're inside the distance, essentially.
Inside the distance, essentially, so by KO or submission or DQ. So Cody Gibson and Kurt the Hurt Hollebaugh. It is a two-pick parlay for plus 1,685.
Damn, I like that. That's a juicy bet there for only two fights, basically. You only
for a two-legger?
Yeah, that's pretty
good. On, brother. Like, I'm trying to give you gold here today.
Mm-hmm. I like that.
This is the parlay I was most excited about for this week. This is my money horse. I think this one's going to hit for sure.
I think it's got a very high probability of it. I agree on Hollebaugh. To me, was one of the harder ones to pick on the card as well, as far as picking a winner. I thought it was a pretty relatively even matchup. A lot of their strengths kind of cancel each other out, but I came to the conclusion Hollebaugh's a little more versatile in his finishes. He's got more tools to bring to the table, and I think he's also more durable. I think he can kind of go to war a little bit more. He's got a little bit more tread left on the tires, and I'd go Hollebaugh. Or Hollebaugh, however the hell you say it. I've heard it said about every which way this week.
I've heard it said every single way you can hear it said. Yeah, I mean, I called him Kurt Hollebaugh whenever we were in Vegas and he didn't correct me. So I'm assuming that I said it right. Otherwise, I would hope he'd correct me just because I don't want to say it wrong, you know. but again, just before we move past this one, like Trey Ogden, nothing but love for him. Definitely want to see him do well. Love the nickname Samurai Ghost. Fucking fire ass nickname there. Coming off of a loss from Ignacio Bahamondes, which is also a very fun name to say. And before that, he had some up and down kind of runs, right? JJ Okanovich is who he beat to get into the UFC. He beat that guy in Fury FC via arm triangle in the second round, then came into the UFC on short notice, lost to Jordan Levitt, and then got a win over Daniel Zaluber. So he's game for a win. He's due for a win. He needs a win. But I just think he's going to end up getting finished pretty badly out there by somebody that has wins over Lee Hammond, Jason Knight, Austin Hubbard, who else has this guy fought? I mean, he's fought against a who's who. He got fucked when he got to the UFC. Like, they're like, hey, you made it to the UFC. Great job. Here's Howny Barcelos. Oh, you lost to him? Well, here's Shane Burgos. Prime. Oh, you lost to him? Fuck it. Here's Thiago Moises. There's no chance you'll get grinded out by this fucking up and comer. Like, just come on. Like, we're called the No Filter Show for a reason. It's because we deliver things no filter, right? And No Filter, he got fucked. No lube, he got fucked. Like, it was bad. And then they cut him and they're like, all right, well, go win your way up to the Tough Show and then, break. You know, beat three guys in Tough and then we'll, you know, give you a shot again. So, fuck me, right? Like, the guy has done everything he's needed to do. He deserves a break. I think he's going to get it on Saturday night over Trey Samurai Ghost Ogden. I think he's going to put the hurt on him. Pun intended. moving into the next one here. So that's it for the prelims. Pretty fucking banger, solid prelims there. The main card has had a few changes, okay? It's originally supposed to be... Let's see. Who is it supposed to be? Is Justin Toffa versus Carl Williams canceled? No, it was originally supposed to be the other Toffa, Junior Toffa, against Carl Williams. Big Brother has stepped in. Reverse order of what happened last time when Big Brother was supposed to fight, got injured, and then Little Brother had to step in. So, that's a fun fight. Edmund Shahbazyan is also on the main card, coming in against AJ Dobson, originally slated to fight Dusko Todorovic, which would have been a very fun fight. Just like Billy Quarantillo, Billy the Squid Quarantillo was originally slated to go against Gabriel Miranda. And now he's going to go against Yusuf Zalal, who I think is a little bit of a tougher match for him. So we're going to jump right on into it. Starting us off, we have Fernando Padilla coming in against Luis Pajuelo. I'll go ahead and let you take the lead on this. I feel like I've been just steamrolling us through these. Who you got? And tell us how it goes.
Oh, that's no problem, man. Lead the way. I don't mind picking up and getting the scraps there. No, this is a fun matchup. This is we kind of have like an unknown factor, at least to some extent, with is it Pajuelo? Or I think that's close to at least how you say it. Now, he's got an impressive record. Got a good right straight, I've noticed. He pumps that sucker over and over again and seems to land it pretty consistently. Seems to be pretty dominant on the ground. He's got some heavy ground and pound. It gets a little squirrely sometimes, but he's landing heavy-ass shots. I don't know if you saw that last fight, too, where he was in like a top half-guard position and threw a knee to the body that just straight-up rocked the guy. I was like, damn, that was pretty slick. Like, I'm a little surprised you don't see that more often. And then he went straight gorilla hammer fist on him and proceeded to get the Donkey Kong finish, which is always pretty dope. And then you got old Fernando. He's only 27, so he's, 2 years younger. He's 6'1", 76-inch reach, so he's got that advantage pretty significantly there. My one concern with he keeps his hands quite low, I've noticed, very often, especially in the exchanges, and he likes to slap his punches, like his hooks and stuff. He does exactly what you're doing, like a cat, pawing at people, and against a nice right straight. I don't know how well that's going to fare for you, especially when this guy has 7 knockouts. It's going to be one I don't often take the unknown factor, but it's got me interested, especially at plus 135. Like, man, this guy's got a decent amount of knockouts. He's pretty sound, pretty resilient. Like, I'll take the gamble. Screw it. Now, you could also take maybe like an inside the distance or take a knockout. You got plus 400 on that. Like, that's round one. He seems to get it done relatively early. You could take a safe, get plus 260. I don't know. Overall, your boy likes to play it safe. I'll go money line plus 135 on Pajuelo. What's your take on it?
On this one, I'll be honest. I don't know that I'm going to put any heat on it. I don't know that I'm going to do any actual betting on this one. I will say exactly like you basically said the two notes that I had, like the knee to the grounded opponent's body, like doesn't get utilized nearly often enough the way that like he does that. And also Khalil Roundtree has the best body shot that nobody uses. The downed opponent, like fucking soccer kick to the ribcage.
Yeah,
why do not more people do that? It's disgusting. Like me and Drew looked at each other and we're like, it was insane. Was that legal? Can you do that? And then when we both came to the conclusion that that's legal, we're like, why the fuck does nobody do that? That's insane. You're like, you break ribs that way, dude. So yeah, I mean, I do think that, that's probably the right bet. That's probably the safe bet. So I will probably go that way if I put anything on this one. But I digress. This is one that I might just stay away from altogether. Padilla is a really, really solid fighter here. But his opponent definitely has a puncher's chance. However, he's going to have to do some crazy, crazy, craziness to get in range to hit a punch with that huge reach deficit that he's coming in with, right? It's substantial. We're talking about 69.5 inches to 76, guys. And it's nasty. And the fact that Fernando knows how to use his reach, scary thing, scary prospect. So, give me the favorite in this one, play it safe. But I probably won't bet any money on this one, guys. Moving into the next one though, I have to do a little bit of a sprinkle on this one, even if it's just a little bit, Billy the Squid. Come on. Love this guy. Billy Quarantillo coming in against Yusef Zolol. This has banger written all over it, folks. I think this could end up potentially being fight of the night, but tough break because they're on there with Cody Gibson fights and Kurt the Hurt Hollebaugh fights. Like those guys are fight of the night machines, in my opinion. They're very exciting fighters. So Billy the Squid has his work cut out for him as far as being, fight of the night. That being said, I still think that he gets the win here fairly dominantly. If and when he gets it, though, I think he's going to get it done either by decision or finish in the very last round. The reason I say that is Billy is one of those guys, very Dustin Poirier-esque. Shout out to the shirt here. Thanks, Drew. Appreciate you, brother. Thanks for the early birthday gift. he's one of those guys that very Dustin Poirier, like, he picks up steam as the fight goes on. The longer it goes, the stronger he gets. And the more volume he starts landing throughout these fights as well. So give me Billy the Squid in this one. I think he's going to make it seem like he's just got eight limbs in there against his opponent on Saturday night. Youssef Zalal is definitely a game opponent. The Moroccan Devil is a absolute savage. But he had a tough run last time he was in the UFC. Again, not necessarily his fault 100%. They fed him to Ilya Topuria. Come on, fuck on. And then Sungwoo Choi. And then Sean Woodson, who is just fucking the weirdest built fighter in the world. The sniper. I love watching that guy fight. He's so fun, dude.
Trains like 3 miles watching from my house.
Oh, let's go. That dude is literally like the most oddly body shaped guy in the world, but he has like the perfect body for Muay Thai. He has like no torso, all arms and legs. It's just weird, bro. But I love it. I fucking love that guy. Those are his three losses. Then he got kicked out of the UFC essentially. He strung together a handful of wins in Sparta 98, Sparta 93. He had three fights in one night for Sparta 98, which is kind of wild, right? So he had one boxing match, got a win, one kickboxing match, got a win in the second round. And then I'm assuming a full MMA rules fight in the very same night. So three fights, three different rule set fights, won all three of them. That is really impressive. But, like, who are you doing that against, right? The guy he got the MMA win over has a 0-0 record. So, I don't understand. Like, he's never had any real professional fights. They did not count as a professional fight. Doesn't make any sense to me. But that guy also had a win in that same night, too. Very, very weird setup for the Sparta 98. I'll have to look more into that one. I don't understand the necessary, like, if it is considered pro, if it's not considered pro, because it's on this guy's pro record, but not his opponent's. Anyways, sounds like he's had some circus fights outside of the UFC, fought his way back in. I think he's not going to get it done on Saturday. I think Billy Q goes out there, uses his range, uses his range control, because he actually has a 2-inch deficit of reach in this fight coming against Youssef. But the way that he uses his range is much better. His jab is really nice. He has a piston-like jab. And I truly think that he's learned from his losses. It shows in his fights, typically. So this is going to be no different. He's going to go out there, lead the dance, dictate the pace of the fight, and he'll probably end up controlling his opponent at range and then look to control him against the cage for a lot of the fights. I could see it going to the, like I said, the distance or third round finish.
Your confidence in it makes me want to go with Quarantillo. When I was saying I had only a couple that I was like really, really torn on, this was one of the other ones. The age, once you get to 8 years different in age, I actually start putting a fair amount of weight on it. When it's only like 4 years, 5 years, it's like, all right, it may be a factor, maybe not. 8 years, a guy in his mid-20s to a guy in his upper 30s, like that's a fair bit of difference there. Kind of comparable records there when you start looking at them. There's a 5-fight swing difference, but it's relatively similar in composition and stuff. The big factor there is the split decision with Sean Woodson and going to a decision with Ilya Topuria, which, like, I think it's a wildly different Ilya probably than the one we're seeing today, given that it's damn near 4 years since then removed. And it was a unanimous decision, whereas it was a split with Sean Woodson. Something about seeing Billy Q catch that knee from old Edson kind of turned me off him a little bit. The way he was shooting on those were just sloppy as hell. He wasn't really setting him up a ton. It was just kind of like a naked shot, and hence ate the shot from Edson. Now, I don't think Youssef is Edson Barboza in the striking department necessarily. I'm just saying he may be susceptible to it. I personally would probably leave this one alone, but you got me kind of halfway convinced old Billy. What you call him, Billy the Squid? I've never heard that before. That's freaking hilarious. That was cracking me up.
Billy the Squid, baby.
Yeah, I like that. Billy the Squid. He's the old Squid Billy. You ever watch that Billy show, Squid Billies?
That's a weird one. That's a weird fucking show, man.
Super weird one, but it's hilarious.
That's a weird show.
That and The Heart She Holler, both about the weirdest shows ever. But
next.
I guess I'm going to leave this one alone. If I was forced to pick, maybe I would pick Yusuf just for the fun, just for the be a contrarian and pick something different so we could do a shot on it or something. But I wouldn't personally put much skin on this one. I'd probably leave it alone.
I'm going to put one unit on the over over 1.5 rounds to win 1.19 units on this one. Fucking yeah, minus 580. I do think Billy Q would get it done late. Let me see. Is that like
1800.
A 1800? Ooh.
Yeah, round three is plus 1,800. Round two is plus 1,100. I don't hate either of those. You put a 10th on either of them and come out way ahead.
Yeah, round props are fun, man. Round props are fun. Oh, I suck man. At those. I'll hit every now and then. Oh, okay.
Or you could take round three and decision together at plus 110. Kind of got your late and your decision. I think that's one of the things you mentioned.
I think I might actually take the late round finish here for Billy the Squid. Plus 1600 is very enticing. So is plus 1000. I think I'm going to put. Yeah, fuck it. I'm going to do it. Yeah. All right. We're putting a fifth of a unit on both of those. Billy Q in round three and Billy Q in round two. I like it because it rhymes. It's even funner. Yeah, I actually really like that. I'm not mad at that at all. So. Yeah, that's one unit to win 17 if he wins in round three, and that is one unit to win 11 if he wins in round two. The odds on those are plus 1,000 for round two and plus 1,600 for round three. I'm happy with it, man. I think we get it done there, and I'm confident that Billy gets it done. I think if he gets it done, it'll be realistically round three or decision, but he could also get it done in round two. And I don't necessarily think it's juicy enough to take decision at plus 140. Yeah. Actually, you know what? Let's see. Let's doctor this up a little bit. Yeah, I think I might do that. Let's see. We are going to do a quarter of a unit on Billy Q by decision. We're going to do a little three-way crazy boy bet hedge there. Because I think Billy gets it done no matter what. And if he gets it done by decision, we break even on the three other bets because we'll get exactly three units off of a quarter unit. Or not three units. Sorry. We'll get... we will get a little over a half a unit off of that quarter of a unit, which would, again, cover that spread. So, three-fifths of a unit. So, I'm happy with that.
Plus 140?
Yeah, plus 140. Yeah, I think I'm happy with that. I don't know, man. It's tough. Let's see here. We got some folks in the chat. Conehead Zombie. Hello. How you doing? Doing good. How are you doing? Welcome to the chat. Welcome to the channel. We also got Stellar Alexander.
Oh, Big Stell. What's up?
What up,
Big
dude?
Stell, what up? That's my boy there.
Like, happy to see him in the chat.
Signed my balls on my chat. No problem, brother. Here you go. Let me get that right quick.
Get that Sherpy. There
you go. Special autograph just from your boy. What's up, Big Stell?
Love to see it. Billy Q is definitely my pick in that one. I feel like I may have sold you on it. We'll see. This next one is one I'm actually more excited about just because it's perfect matchmaking. And this is one of those things where we were talking about literally in last episode we did together, where we're like, you know, do they ever match up people that are, you know, on the same up and coming trajectory? And it's like, well, one of these guys is going to crash and burn. This is that fight. This is definitely that fight. So we have Peyton Talbot, the young kid, coming in against Cameron Simon, Africa's Own, 23 years of age versus 25 years of age, both up-and-comers, both prominent, both very talented in the 135-pound bantamweight division of the UFC. Big difference here is the reach, right? You got a 3.5-inch reach advantage for Peyton Talbot. But I don't want to steamroll into breaking this one down. I want to let you take the lead. Oh, where's he going?
Just opening the door. It's hot in here.
Oh, I was like, we lost him. Bad timing. Yeah, I want to let you take the lead on this one just because I'm curious on your thoughts of this Talbot guy. Like, do you think he's the truth? We've seen a lot more of the other guy, Cameron Simon. So how do you see this one playing out, Max?
This one, it's like you said, it's a very interesting matchup. Two guys kind of on the rise here, two young up-and-comers. They're only two years different in age. One of the things that stood out to me taking a look at this matchup, Talbot's got a 52% striking accuracy, which is pretty A-OK in my book. He's also pretty dynamic with it. He mixes it up, does a lot of high and low attacks. He's quick, decent on the feints, you know, kind of getting people to bite on him, stuff like that. He's very pressure-oriented. He moves forward, walks forward quite a bit, rips some good body kicks. The gas tank, I also noticed, like, the guy's got a pretty solid gas tank, or his pacing is just where it's at. Because I also noticed he's not, like, blitzkrieging these people. He's kind of a nice slow – he's Jason Voorhees, like a slow, steady walk forward, chucking some shots at you. Exactly, dude. The concerning part leaves almost no head movement, like kind of right in the center line, chin up a little bit. It's like, all right, a little set will be getting tagged. Sprawling, he got an okay sprawl, not the greatest wrestler, but neither is Cameron Simon, so it's like, all right, we're probably a wash here. I might even give a slight wrestling edge to Talbot because he did recover multiple times pretty well. I also think Simon leaves his head a little bit in the center line here. He doesn't have a whole lot of head movement to be spoken of. Now, people say his fight IQ is like next level. It looked a little wild to me last fight.
His decision making is next level. His fight IQ is up there, like, but his head stays on the center line, bro. Like,
yeah, he also
Muay Thai coaches would like cringe.
Yeah,
his shot selection does leave some things to be desired in his last fight.
The last fight, especially the random spinny shit with no setup, just kind of
didn't make any sense.
No,
it's shit up. They'll like a tapping leg kick before you do a spinning back wheel kick like that, and make sure that you're inside range. Don't just throw in waste energy and blow your fuel tank. You know, like you're not doing anything with them. So I completely agree with that critique.
Simon, I think, might have the movement advantage, though. Talbot, while not necessarily flat-footed, I don't think he moves quite as well in and out and maybe side to side as Simon. The conversely, flip side of that, Simon charging in leaves himself open to be getting, you know, countered on that. He kind of coming on the way in there can get tagged by somebody who clearly has a fair amount of power in Talbot. I'm kind of leaning on Peyton here a little bit. While we maybe have seen more out of Cameron and he's, you know, South African and on the rise and all this kind of stuff, I'm not big on the hype beast type guys, and I almost wonder if this is one of those cases where there's more hype than necessarily warranted. Sure. I'll take Peyton, probably the money line. You could maybe do the over 2.5. Minus 205. I don't necessarily, both of them are relatively durable, not going out there getting slept and stuff. So you maybe take that one if you don't want to necessarily pick a singular winner, but it forced to do that, I'd take Peyton probably money line.
Yeah. I mean, believe it or not, I actually like Peyton in this one too. I know he's the favorite, but I feel like he should be the dog in this one because he's, you know, even though he's the older guy, he's the younger guy in the UFC, right? But again, this is one of those where I am a little bit torn on, right? Cameron Simon is a really good fighter. He's not this like cerebral machine like people paint him out to be, but he's very good and he's very young. I think more of the reason that people talk about his fight IQ and him being next level with his IQ is because he's 23 years old. Like, he's a fucking child. So the fact that he's able to do as much as he's done and do as well as he's doing at the stage in his career, I mean, I think it says a lot. But he is coming off that loss to Christian Rodriguez, as you pointed out, and I think he showed a lot of holes in that fight against C-Rod. And if he repeats any of those holes in there against somebody like Peyton Talbot that is just as young and just as hungry as him, it's going to prove to be a very, very tough night at the office, right? I just think that C-Rod exposed a lot of holes, and Talbot, if he's got a good coaching staff, which, I mean, I'm assuming he does to have made it as far as he had in his career, they're going to point those holes out to Talbot, and Talbot's going to go out there and expose them even further. Talbot has a really good striking arsenal. His ability to land again at range is really solid. He impressed me a lot in his last fight, which candidly was one of the first fights of his I saw. And then, of course, I went back and watched some tape on him. But he went in there against Nick Aguirre, and I mean, he outlanded him 3-1. It was 18-58 on total strikes landed, and it was 28-5 on significant strikes landed. So he outlanded him 5-1, more than 5-1 on significant strikes. Meanwhile, his opponent was able to get 2 of 10 takedowns, but as you pointed out so eloquently, he was able to fight back to his feet fairly quickly. The control time in that was pretty limited, and even when his opponent had control, he wasn't able to do a lot with it because he was constantly fighting hands and constantly fighting to control the position, which he was fairly unable to do. So give me Peyton Talbot in this one. I don't know if I'm going to bet it just yet. I'm going to have to look at this one later and see if I add anything on it. If I do, I might throw it in like a little 2 or 3 legger parlay. But as of right now, not taking any heat on this one. If you ask me for my advice, my opinion on this, I would tell you the safest bets are probably going to be the Peyton Talbot money line or the over 2.5. Both these guys are very gritty, durable guys. I don't think that there's going to be a finish before that last two and a half minutes. So I think that's a fairly safe bet, but I think a safer bet would be Peyton Talbot in this one.
Especially at minus 150. I mean, that's not bad odds at all. Not bad at all. Under minus 200, I'd take it. I like that one.
Yeah, that one's not bad at all. And to put that into perspective, guys, like one unit would get you 1.67, right? So not terrible. We don't hate those odds at all here. So moving into the next one, we got Edmund Shahbazyan coming back again against AJ Dobson. This is a fun one, folks. Do you have a dog in this race? Are you throwing anything down on the line here?
I most likely will leave this one alone as well. It's one that I think they're trying to kind of set Edmund up here for like the 15th time to like give him some showcase, come out here and do something and kind of look good. But will he shit the bed yet again? It remains to be seen. AJ's clearly a pretty strong dude. He's like one of these well-rounded guys, like in UFC, the video game. He'd have like a 70 in all stats, and then maybe in like chin and heart, he'd have like an 80. It's not like it even that would be standout. Relatively strong, very flat-footed, kind of heavy on the back foot, almost like a Muay Thai stance, bouncing the front foot with the hands and everything. Like, loads up a bit when he's throwing the big shots upstairs. Then you got, of course, Edmund. He's black belt in karate. He's got like the bladed Shotokan stance, good in and out movement. His endurance leaves a bit to be desired here. And then there's obviously this gaping hole in his grappling department. Now, will AJ go out there? I mean, it's the obvious game plan. Now, will AJ be able to get it done? I don't necessarily know. The guy's just not a standout enough to me that I could like reasonably say, hey, he's gone out here and proven that he's able to implement this style of game plan. That's the obvious game plan. I just don't necessarily know that he's going to go out there and be able to implement it, especially when they're effectively given a lob for Edmund to smack it out of the park for, again, the 15th time. So I'd leave it alone. I'd lean a little bit towards Edmund because that's clearly what they're trying to do. But I think it's close enough. AJ could very easily get the upset. What's your take?
I agree with everything you said. Not a ton to add there as far as like color commentary here. I think Edmund Shahbazyan is one of those guys that was very, very much touted as the next big thing coming out of the Ronda Rousey camp and the height of Ronda Rousey. However, he is 1-4 in his last five. His opponent is 3-2 in his last five. And I mean, I got to be honest with you here. This is tailor-made for Shahbazyan to go out there and get a win. I think they're trying to give him a bounce back match against an AJ Dobson that's very game to fight just about anybody, it seems. But does the Golden Boy have the ability to stay on the feet and keep the fight standing? That's what really comes to question for me, right? Because AJ Dobson is somebody who is at a point in his career where he knows what he has to do, right? And I don't think that he's afraid to make a fight boring. We saw that against Tafan and Chukwu, right? So I think he will go out there and he will grind. That's what he did in his last fight that he got a win in, right? He went out there, he grinded it out against Tafan and Chukwi. He got 2 of 3 takedowns, landed 98 strikes, 67 of them were considered significant. fairly dominant control from him on the top. And we've seen the golden boy, Edmund Shahbazyan, really struggle in those positions before. So I truly think that this is a, it's supposed to be a tailor-made matchup for him. It's supposed to be a bounce back fight for him, but I just don't think that those exist in this division. You're always going to have someone with wrestling in their back pocket. I will say that the Fluffy loss that he suffered in his last fight has aged significantly well. Fluffy has looked fucking incredible in his last fight. So, I mean, that's aged extremely well. I don't think that that should be considered a huge knock. Nasruddin Imavov, come on. Jack Hermanson, again, aged pretty fucking well, right? Derek Brunson, aged pretty well too. So, the guys he has lost to are not fucking shitty fighters. They're really good fighters. It's just a matter of he hasn't been able to find his footing and really bounce back since that original Derek Brunson loss. I do think that this could be another loss like that. I'm staying the fuck away from this because I want to be able to enjoy it as a fan, though. Not betting on this one. There's the unpredictable. Edmund Shahbazyan has knockout power. He's got one shot knockout power. We've seen it. We've seen it. We just haven't seen it in some time. But it's still there. Power's the last thing to go. And he's young. So it's not like he's losing fucking assets right now or attributes. He should be gaining them. It's just a matter of where's he training? Who's he training with? Is he doing the right things outside of fights in order to see himself actually get better? And I think he is. He's fighting at Extreme Couture. That's a damn good gym. I don't think that they're going to let him go out there and look worse than he did in his last fight. And I don't think he looked terrible in his last fight. He just fought a really fucking good opponent. So I want to see Edmund Shahbazyan do well. I really do. AJ Dobson, he's 32 years of age. He's definitely older than the 26-year-old Edmund Shahbazyan. He also has a one-inch reach advantage. And like I said, he's at the point in time in his career where he's not afraid to make a fight boring and grindy. And I think he will end up doing that on Saturday, unfortunately.
I think if he's smart, that's the obvious path to victory. That would be the wise move. Now, in a fight that should be a lob, but is effectively almost a damn near toss-up, if you're just playing the numbers, plus 160 on AJ Dobson is a very it's a very likely possibility here, in my opinion. So not the worst idea on planet Earth, but it's not something I'd personally play. It's a possibility though. I think those odds are a little skewed.
Definitely agree with that. Definitely agree with that. I think those odds are a little bit odd. That's why they call them odds, I guess, you know, hey, bad jokes all fucking day. So with that bad joke being said, we will go ahead and jump into the co-main event of the evening, which is Carl Williams coming in against Justin Taffa. I know it's got co-main event written all over it after all those exciting fights we just talked about. I honestly don't understand the stack rank position of this co-main event. How did this happen? Why did this happen? Are they going to do like clips of famous brothers from film history before announcing that Justin Taffa stepped in on short notice to fight for his brother, Junior Taffa? After just months ago, Junior Taffa stepped in on short notice to fight for his brother, Justin Taffa. Will he suffer the same fate and lose on short notice? Find out on the next episode of UFC.
Dragon Ball Z music kicks in.
You know what I'm saying?
You already know John Anik's going to mention it. Like, he's already going to bring that shit up.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Just weeks ago, this man's brother stepped up for him on short notice, and now he's returning the favor. Will Justin Taffa be able to get it done? He seems like the bigger guy here, but he is going against a very game Carl Williams. I feel like he'll deliver something like that.
100%. And it'll do his laugh. It fucking kills me every time.
Every time. He did, like, a four-banger on last week's episode of the Anik Florian podcast. He was like, ha! I was like, whoa, he can do that video. It was wild, bro. I don't have that saved, but I've got the
same.
It's close enough. It's close enough. Yeah, I think this is a very interesting fight, to say the least. Carl Williams, originally slated to fight Junior Taffa, is now coming in against Justin Taffa. This is a very fun matchup. 30-pound deficit as far as weight, which is not something you usually hear. I do think this was a much more even kill bout for Carl Williams originally as it was scheduled against Junior Taffa. Junior's a much smaller guy, which is probably why he suffered the fate he did stepping in for his big brother there against his big brother's last scheduled opponent. I digress. Congrats to Marcos Rogério de Lima on that one again. He definitely went out there and made it look fairly easy against Junior Tafa. I think Justin Tafa goes out here and does the same thing against Carl Williams. Don't get it twisted, right? Carl Williams is a beast. He's a solid fighter. He's as good as the next heavyweight. But I mean, his big win in the UFC was over Lucas Brzezinski and Chase Sherman. Chase Sherman has been cut from the UFC like 5 times, and they just keep bringing him back on short notice fights. Like, if you're going to bring him back, give him a full camp. Because with a full camp, maybe he beats Carl Williams. If it's not on 6 days notice or however many fucking days it was. But again, that's just the way the cookie crumbles sometimes. I think this guy has been handed pretty, I don't want to say safe opponents, but safe opponents, right? I think Chase Sherman had a month and a week to prepare for that belt. He was originally given it on short notice in April, and then actually it got canceled. So they ended up having to run it again a month later. So he had a little over a month to train for this fight against Carl Williams. And I mean, Justin Tafa, he only needs a day because he's a bad man. And he's got power in both hands. He's got power in his legs, too. He can finish you via leg kicks. He can finish you with his hands. I think the safest bet on this one is probably going to be to take the under. But I'm a big Tafa guy. I'm going to put a fifth of a unit on Tafa just for funsies. Fifth of a unit here. Mind you, one unit would get you 2.54. So, yeah, I'm okay with that. It's plus 154 odds here. Anytime I get Justin Tafa at plus odds, got to put at least a sprinkle of something on him. Do you think that Vegas got this one right? Would you put Carl Williams as a favorite in this one?
It's such a weird. If it was a normal case scenario, they both had full camps, I could maybe sort of see it. I don't know, man. This doesn't make a whole hell of a lot of sense to me. The weight is a factor. I think Justin Tafa is going to be a hell of a lot harder to take down because of the weight. I also think Carl Williams, it's not like he goes out there and just straight up employs grappling. He gets in these silly-ass exchanges sometimes that he gets caught in. And it's like, bro, against Tafa, you ain't doing that. If you get caught, you're going to sleep. That's it. Now, I think it's very obvious that he has the athleticism and grappling advantage. Anybody's got the grappling advantage over the Tafa boys, unfortunately. I don't know that it's going to be enough of an advantage, and I don't necessarily think he implements that advantage in the right way that it's going to lead to a victory here. I think it's, I don't know, which is harder, grinding a guy out for a fucking 15-minute decision win or landing one big shot and putting his lights out? That's kind of the game you're playing here. Forced to pick a singular winner here, I'd probably have to go Tafa just because there's probably a higher chance of him landing that one shot than Carl Williams successfully grinding him out for 15 whole minutes. But when I bet, I generally like to try and protect both ends of it if I can. And it wouldn't surprise me if Carl Williams, on the event that he does get it to the ground, he therein gets a win. So it's like take the inside the distance on both ends of it. You've got all possibilities so long as it's finished, you know, before the final bell rings. You got plus money on both sides. You got Carl Williams plus 165 inside the distance. You got Justin Tafa north of 200 inside the distance. Let me let you in on a little secret here. That's the only way Tafa is going to win is inside the distance. You could even take a KO, but it's literally the same odds. So just on the weird off chance he somehow randomly decides to woke up this morning and says, fuck it, I'm going for a submission and pulls it off, you get the same odds and you still get that win also. So you might as well just take it to be safe. So I'd hedge it, force pick one guy. I'd probably go Tafa.
I appreciate that, actually. I appreciate you throwing that out there because I will actually change my bet. I'm going to take Justin Tafa. I'm going to do... Fuck it. I like this one. I'm going to take Justin Tafa, half a unit inside the distance. So DraftKings Sportsbooks has the double chance victory, which is basically inside the distance odds. So it's KO, TKO, DQ, or submission. Justin Tafa, and it is plus 200, as you said. So plus 200. Again, I mean, it's a no-brainer. If he gets it done, he gets it done by finish. That's one unit to net you three. So I'm going to go ahead and throw a half on there to net me 1.5 units. Why the fuck not? I think that's a solid one. This next one, I know we're probably going to disagree on. I have a feeling that we are going to disagree on. And it's okay. because even I'm kind of questioning myself a little bit here. But I digress. We have Amanda Ribas coming in against Thug Rose. Thug Rose. Thug Rose. Thug Rose. This is a very fun fight. This is a very interesting matchup considering it's happening at flyweight. I feel like it should probably be happening at their respective other weight classes since they have both fought between flyweight and strawweight, and both have better records at strawweight. It would just make sense for this fight to be taking place at strawweight. But that being said, Ben Hibas has definitely had more fights at flyweight and more wins at flyweight. Who do you have winning this fight, and how do you see it ultimately playing out? Because this is a bit more of a toss-up than Vegas would let you know, in my opinion.
That's probably the biggest takeaway from this, looking at the matchup and stuff. This is effectively, or at least in my brain, a coin toss, and they've got somebody.
It should be a fucking -110, -110 pick'em. I don't understand the odds for this at all. +180 on Amanda Ribas? I don't fucking understand.
You play that line all day long.
I'm playing that line all fucking day long.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me, bro? That's literally like, that's the money in the bank line, bro.
You take that one and you take her by decision, just a little sprinkle as well. You're getting +450 right now on that. I hammer the shit out of it. I'd sprinkle probably a half unit there and maybe one on her straight up. It's a fight where you're betting on somebody who has relatively consistent performances. Now, whether they're wins or losses, you're kind of taking that out of the factor. What she's doing is relatively consistent. And then on the other side, you've got somebody with an incredible amount of hype, but is extremely inconsistent in their performances, in my opinion. And also, I hate to say it, a little bit of a head case. You got somebody who just loves to fucking be there. Couldn't be happier, couldn't be more ecstatic to be there. And then you got somebody, you can't tell one day if she wants to fucking jump off a bridge, and then the other day she wants to go out there and be a champion. It's like, all right, lady, what's going on? I don't think she's got the best team surrounding her. Also, I'm not a fan, like, without getting into all the weird.
Trevor Whitman will not be in her corner now for the second time in a row.
Well, that's
just a heads up on that.
Yeah, I heard that, but the other guy is the glaring problem I see with that factor, and that's why I'm steering clear of that whole thing, because it's just weird. It's a weird situation, and I don't know enough about it to really dive into it. But without getting into all that, I think one person loves to be there. She's got a judo background, been there. Been fighting since she was a little girl, been doing tournaments, jiu-jitsu tournaments, this, that, and the other. And you got Thug Rose, who just is too inconsistent and way too much of a favorite in a fight that should effectively be a toss-up. Smart man, smart money plays Ribas all day long. I could see Rose maybe squeaking out some kind of decision bullshit. I mean, you could hedge, do a double decision. You're getting insane plus money on both sides of that. And you know your boy likes to do some hedges. You got a decision or technical decision for Rose, +250. Decision or technical decision for Ribas, +450. Hammer the shit out of it. I mean, you may see a finish or something, so take the money line with Ribas, but Rose is just too inconsistent for me, man. That Esparza shit left a super sour taste in my mouth as well. You don't really get that kind of shit from Ribas. Now, last note and full disclosure, I can't get Ribas Rice to save my fucking life. I think I've got her right one bet ever. So it's like I bet on her, she loses. I bet against her, she wins. Well, I don't know. I just feel like smart money plays her. Those odds are out of whack. What about you?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, man. I think smart money plays her. Her only real losses are Marina Rodriguez, Kaitlyn Chookagian, and fucking Macy Barber. That fight with Vivian Araujo was disgustingly fun. That fight with Luana Pinheiro was fucking incredibly fun. Mm-hmm. And I just think that she has fought real flyweights and beaten them. She has been undersized and beaten them. And in this one, she's not going to be undersized. She's 2 inches shorter, but she's got a longer reach, and she is definitely going to be the one that wants to be there. And, you know, just telling you, from the heart, man, like, she's a guilty pleasure fighter for me. Like, I love her excitement. It's intoxicating seeing her in there. Seeing how happy she is to be in there makes me happy to watch her be in there. I felt that way when I'd watched Johnny Hendricks fight. The way that he would smile when he would walk to the octagon, I was like, this guy's fucking happy to be in the building, dude. And I'm happy to watch him do whatever the fuck he's about to do now as a result. I got behind Johnny Hendricks very quickly because he's like, yeah, let's go, dude. Smiling when he's walking to the fucking cage. And the second they lock the door, it's like.
I hated Hendricks, but I could not agree more on Reba. She's the most bubbly and it's okay. Personality like, ever.
That's the thing. Like, we don't all have to agree, but like when somebody does have like a smile and doesn't seem like they hate doing what they're doing, huge it makes a vast difference. Huge. Whether it's the person scanning your fucking shit at Walmart or the guy you're watching on TV fighting the UFC, a smile goes a long way for anybody. So, you know, seeing that smile, seeing that happiness of being in there, it's intoxicating. And more so than that, like, you know, I'm a huge Captain America fan. I mean, obviously, you can't tell from the fucking background art and shit and like the tattoo and all that stuff. But anyways, Captain America had two base martial arts, judo and boxing. Amanda Ribas, it's well known that she's a judo background and her boxing is really, really fun. Is she the best boxer in the UFC? No, not a chance. But her boxing is really fun and it's come a long way even in the last three or four fights in the UFC, noticeably. So give me her all day. What am I going to do? Am I going to bet on her? I'm not going to put one unit on her. I'm not going to put a half unit on her. I'm not going to put two. I'm not going to put two and a half. I'm going to put three.
Damn.
Putting three units on Amanda Ribas money line. I think she gets it done over a half checked out Rose Namajunas. I think Thug Rose is someone that I used to really get behind. Someone me and my fiance used to really love watching. But as of late, she's gone down a different path. She's looked less consistent. And she's also, again, as you stated, looked like less and less that she wants to be there. So if you don't want to be there, it's really hard for me to be confident in you winning. That being said, over the course of 1,537 picks on Tapology, 77% of people think Thug Rose gets it done. Losing faith in these people right now because they're definitely wrong. I think it's a lot of,
hype,
you know,
name.
Hype and name, and honestly, name value is huge, but I feel like it's crazy how some names can conquer the tale of it's not what you've done, but what you've done for me lately. Because Amanda Ribas has done a lot more for us lately as fans. I think we can all agree on that. But if you're not watching the prelims, if you're not watching all these fights where you actually get to see her showcasing her skills, you missed the boat, kid. It's not on us. Like, so these guys have it wrong. Vegas has it wrong. But I can tell you that the MMA Anomaly Show No Filter has it right. that's just the fucking fact, kids. Okay. Take it to the bank. That's my pick. It's
Rose just has this rabid fucking fan base and has for some time now that it moves lines. You just got to almost take that completely out of the factor. Ronda was very much the same. Ronda could have had a fucking arm amputated and they were still going to pick
her. I liked Ronda, though.
People. I liked her, but that's still.
Yes, I agree. A lot of her fan base are like her fan base made her almost have a bad name.
Well,
because of how rabid they
were. Like somebody, and there's one thing to completely ignore a matchup because you like somebody, and it's like you can like somebody and still look at a fight analytically, which is in theory what
Charles
Oliveira
fans
trying to do.
Sorry.
You said what, Charles Oliveira?
Charles Oliveira fans. Sorry, I have a weird cough. Sorry.
100%. 100%. And it's just like this ain't a great matchup for her. She doesn't look like she wants to be there.
All these people are like, oh, the rematch with Islam has to happen. Did you watch the first fight, kids?
I want it for the fun, but I don't think it's. We've talked about before. I don't think it's going to come out any different.
That's what I'm saying. Like
the same result.
I want it just. I want it for the Charles Oliveira fans at this point.
Yeah.
Just because, like, I want to see what Twitter looks like the next 48 hours.
Oh, it'll be
if it plays out again.
Meltdown.
It's just going to be a barren wasteland. I'm intrigued to see if they all turn into Ilia Topuria fans.
I 100% see that happening. That's happening already. I think that fan
because I'm convinced.
Exploding.
I'm convinced that Charles Oliveira fans are just Conor McGregor fans that realize Conor's washed at this point.
I can see it.
They've all decided like, all right, our guy, he's washed. He got beat by the Louisiana guy. All right, this guy Charles just beat the Louisiana guy. Let's fucking jump on that bandwagon. He looks real good.
Yeah.
And then he started losing.
That. Or just the Brazilian equivalent of the Irish fans. Like, it's the same craze, like, rabid fan base there, too. Yeah. Now, I do love the champion has a name, and his name is Charles Oliveira. Like, the gimmick
I mean, that was
is
cool.
great.
That was
the
cool.
blonde hair
it is
great,
a great gimmick.
But, again,
I mean, the fact that everybody had a fucking like shooter box or whatever is coming out of there with the blonde hair now is fantastic.
Oh yeah. Like, that's a perfect example though. Yeah. I like Oliveira better, but I set aside my bias and I know right now how that's going to play out. Islam going to whoop that ass.
He's so too strong,
he's gotta
bro.
Set it aside. Yeah. He's too strong. He's too safe. Like, he plays a very safe game. Like, he does it fucking well.
And the difference between Islam versus most other people that Charles has beat is if they rock him, they won't follow him to the ground due to the submission threat. Islam laughs at the submission threat that Charles presents. I don't think he's scared at all of anything that Charles could throw up submission wise from the ground.
Yeah. I think
because he fights Khabib.
Proficient. Exactly. He has a technical proficiency that it doesn't matter anyway. He knows what's coming and he knows how to get out of it.
Like, if you think that he's afraid of anything grappling wise that Charles has to present, watch the old tapes of him at AKA, not even in fights, just at AKA going against like high school wrestlers that have better grappling than most UFC fighters and getting like crazy fucking like bait and switch takedowns on these kids. Like, so good. The best one is one that he hit on Chase Saldana, who is a state or national ranked wrestler. And that guy went on, I think, 2 years later in nationals and hit the same exact move that he went viral getting pulled on him by Islam. Like,
I already know exactly which one you're talking about.
Dude, hold that guy's a great follow on Instagram, too. Chase Saldante, or I think his name. Fantastic. Like
holding the old wrist, dip down, sweep for the leg. So he steps back, yank him down. Yeah, I know exactly. It's even called like a Russian tie or some bullshit. I forget.
Yeah, a Russian necktie or something. Something like that. Yeah, I mean, it was disgusting. And he made it look so simple, easy, and so fresh and so clean. So yeah, that's it for the fights, guys. We definitely have a little bit of smoke on these. And you know, where there's smoke, there's fire. So we'll be taking that fire all the way to the bank here this week. I think there's going to be a lot of good fights. Do I think this is going to be the best fight card of the year? No, dude. We have UFC 300 this year. Fuck, am I crazy? And 299 already happened, and I think personally that was probably better than 300 is going to be. So we'll see how that goes. We are going to call it a night. I am about 45 minutes into the Roadhouse movie with Conor McGregor, and is a delight so far. Definitely recommend watching it. If you smoke or drink or both, maybe do both of those things before you watch it. And if you don't do either,
consider it.
Very charming movie. Great escape. Will it win an Oscar? No. Will it win your hearts? Fuck, maybe. I don't know. but either way, again, it is out. It is free to watch on Amazon Prime Video. I recommend checking it out for at least a laugh. I haven't seen Conor McGregor in it yet, but man, I'm already entertained so far, so I can't imagine how much Octane's going to pick up when he does come onto screen. So, as we like to say here, if you're new, if you're old, anywhere in between, make sure you like, comment, subscribe, and smash that bell for notifications. And another thing we like to say here, keep on going, keep on growing. We'll see you next time.
You've been listening to the MMA Anomaly Show. No filter. As you may have been able to tell, we dig the MMA, and our passion is to dive deep into the upcoming fights, give you our expert breakdowns, and help you make sense of all the chaos that is the fight game. We hope you've enjoyed the show. If you did, make sure to like, rate, and review. We'll be back soon, but in the meantime, make sure to find us on YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, and Twitch at MMAnomaly. Be cool, and we'll see you next time.